Hey there, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're cracking open Karl Marx's Capital, which sounds like a slog, but Sophie and I found it surprisingly wild. So Sophie, what's the deal with a book that everyone cites, but hardly anyone finishes?
Right? I mean, it's famously dense, but once you get past the first few chapters, it's like he's peeling back the surface of the world we live in every day. Marx starts with something as simple as a commodity, like a loaf of bread or a coat, and then he goes on this massive journey to explain how all of society is built on these things.
So the opening move is looking at a coat and asking why it's worth a certain number of loaves of bread. And his answer is that they're both products of human labor, not the specific work of a tailor or a baker, but just the general effort of human muscles and brains. That's what gives things value.
Exactly. And that was the first big oh wow moment for me. He's saying that behind the everyday exchange of stuff, there's a hidden social relationship between the people who made those things. It's not just about the objects themselves.
Yeah. And then he takes that and builds this whole theory of money. It's not some clever invention to make trade easier. It's like the natural end result of exchanging things. And then he flips it into a whole different game. The goal isn't just to buy stuff you need anymore. It's to start with money, buy stuff, and sell it for more money.
Right. He calls that MCM. And that's where the heartbeat of the whole system kicks in. The capitalist is chasing surplus value, that extra bit that makes the whole thing grow. But where does that extra bit come from?
Okay, so this is the part that got me. The worker sells their labor power for a wage. And the wage is based on what it costs to keep them alive and able to work. So say they can produce enough value to cover that in 4 hours, but they're hired for 10. Those extra 6 hours are unpaid labor. The value they create in that time is surplus value, and the capitalist pockets it. Marx's whole point is that the wage contract looks like a fair swap, but it's actually built on this hidden exploitation.
And it's not just about working longer hours, which he calls absolute surplus value. There's a more subtle way too. He calls it relative surplus value, and that's where technology comes in. If you make production more efficient, the stuff workers need gets cheaper. So the worker only needs to work 3 hours to cover their wages, and the other 7 are surplus.
So that's why capitalism is so obsessed with innovation and new machinery. It's not just about being clever. It's a competitive arms race. The first capitalist to get a new machine can make super profits, but then everyone else catches up, prices fall, and they have to start the chase all over again.
Right. But there's a dark side to all that technological dynamism. Marx says it de-skills workers. They become just appendages to the machine. It also creates a whole army of unemployed people, which he calls the Industrial Reserve Army. And that's not a bug. It's a feature. It keeps wages low and gives the bosses leverage over the workers who still have jobs.
That's brutal, but it makes so much sense when you look at how things actually work. And then he goes even deeper with this idea of commodity fetishism. That's the part that really stuck with me.
Oh yeah, that's where he says we start treating the market like it's a natural force, like the weather. We talk about what the market demands or what capital is looking for. But those are just things we created. The real relationships are between people, but they get hidden behind this veil of stuff and money.
So we're basically worshiping something we made ourselves. We've forgotten that the value in that coat comes from the human labor that went into it, not from some magical property of the coat itself. It's like we're living in a trance.
Totally. And then Marx zooms out to look at the whole system in motion. Volume 2 is about how capital has to keep circulating. It can't just sit still. It has to be thrown into production, then the goods have to be sold, then the money has to be reinvested. Any hiccup in that flow can be catastrophic.
So it's a system that has to constantly grow or it dies. That's not about greed. It's a structural law. And that leads us to Volume 3. Where he tries to explain what we see on the surface, like profit rates and prices. And he tackles this huge paradox.
Right, if labor creates all value, then industries with lots of machines should have lower profit rates than ones that are labor-intensive. But in reality, profits tend to equalize across industries. Marx's answer is that competition forces a redistribution of surplus value. Capital flows to where the profits are higher, which pushes prices down there and up in the other industries, until an average rate is reached.
So an individual capitalist might think they're just a genius investor, but they're really tapping into this common pool of value squeezed out of the working class as a whole. The surface looks fair, but underneath, it's all exploitation.
And that's where he makes his most famous prediction. As capitalists compete and innovate, they replace workers with machines. So the ratio of machines to workers goes up. But since living labor is the only source of surplus value, the rate of profit on all that invested capital tends to fall over the long run.
And that's the hidden spring behind all the major crises. It leads to overproduction, not of things people need, but of capital that can't be profitably invested. So you get frantic searches for new markets and cheap labor, then financial speculation and bubbles, and eventually crashes.
Which makes the whole system inherently unstable. But Marx's critique isn't just about economics. He's pointing out this deep irrationality. Capitalism could create abundance for everyone, but it's organized around profit. When profit dries up, production stops, even if people are starving and warehouses are full.
So the social nature of production clashes with the private way it's all captured. Millions of workers cooperate in these vast networks, but the fruits go to this tiny class. It's like we're all just fuel for this giant machine of accumulation.
And then he ends the book with this tour de force on primitive accumulation. That's where he tells the real history of how capitalism started. It wasn't about thrift and hard work. It was about violently kicking peasants off the land, colonialism, and the slave trade. The original capital was drenched in blood.
So all that stuff about free markets and equal exchange is built on a foundation of theft and violence. That's a heavy pill to swallow.
It is. But Marx isn't really trying to predict the end of the world. He's doing diagnosis. He's showing that this system isn't natural or eternal. It's a specific historical creation, and if it had a beginning, it can have an end.
So the real takeaway is that the economy isn't a thing. It's a set of human relationships, and those relationships can be changed. That's actually kind of hopeful in a weird way.
Yeah, it's an invitation to imagine something different, a society where production is planned to meet human needs, not just to endlessly expand capital. And once you see that, you can't unsee it. This book really does change how you look at everything.
For me, the thing I'm actually taking away is the idea of commodity fetishism. I keep catching myself thinking about the market or capital as if they're alive, but they're just things we made. And remembering that feels like a superpower.
That's a great way to put it. And honestly, if you want to go deeper, the whole library is over at 7minutebooks.com/app. There are over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It's $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 for lifetime access. Marx's Capital is a monumental work, but its core message is simple. The world we live in is not fixed. It was made by human hands, and it can be remade by them too. We'll see you in the next one.